When it was time for our shift, we were summoned by their lights in the clattering of horses' hoofs. We leapt up from our mats and stumbled into the ghetto gate where the horse guards herded us. They made us keep our heads bowed low as they corralled us to the mines. They sat on their horses and prodded us. They snapped their whips in the chilly air. Sometimes one of us didn't move quick enough or fell and was trampled. When we got inside the pit head, they handed us shovels and axes and ropes and bags. They packed us in the metal cage and sent us down to the mine. There was always the fear that the cable would break and send us hurtling to the bottom of the hole. Some of us kept our eyes closed to try to snatch some sleep as we descended. I looked out the hollow shaft while we were being sucked down. There were two guards on the elevator. They wore lights on their helmets, and when they talked to one another, those lights bobbed. When they stared at us, the lights shone in our eyes, and we saw spots of light and impossible color. By those small lights, sometimes I saw the hard column around us, the shiny black seams and powdery dull gray patches, and sometimes an illusion of something wet or red or moving or alive. They stopped the cage and pushed it out into the seams that we were to mine. We worked in pairs. One of us dug at the earth while her partner collected the chunks. The chunks had to be solid and of a certain size. The chips and dust were useless. The partner collected the chunks in a bag, and when the bag was full, she carried the bag to the cart and poured the contents in the cart, which went to the surface. It took years to work a seam, to gouge it out. When the inside had been hacked away, the openings were supposed to be filled in and sealed, but some of them weren't. And sometimes when we were ascending in the cage at the end of the shift, we'd notice there were fewer of us on the way back up. Some misbehaving or provocative or merely ordinary girl had been had in an abandoned scene. Though actually what was done to the girls by the guards occurred more often above than down below. Some girls, in fact, figuring their odds were better beneath the ground, chose to stay down there. And eventually, like the eyeless horses bred underground, they lost the desire, then the ability to see. The ones of us who did come up again were escorted home in darkness by the guards. There was always the push and always the pressing of our tired, unresisting bodies against each other. The guards let us go at the ghetto gate and gave us a few minutes to scurry back to our huts. Once we were in our huts, we were under curfew. We didn't have lights in our huts. The only lights were theirs. Sometimes when they were making their rounds, they'd shoot their flashlights in to make sure we weren't moving. But we didn't want to move. We wanted to sleep. But every night, we heard the clacking of the horses' hooves. And sometimes in the night, we'd hear stampeding. We'd hear the horses' hooves run back and forth over the body of some broken girl who had tried to get out. We knew what would happen if we disobeyed. On the other hand, being a good girl didn't guarantee one's safety. Sometimes, not because she tried to escape, but just because they'd pick a girl. They'd drag her off her mat and out of her hut and into the street and play with her. After she collapsed, they would murder her. How different were the rest of us from those who'd stayed beneath the ground and couldn't see? It took us so long to envision that the way we'd been for so long, the way we had been told was our just lot, could change. One day, one girl threw down her shovel. She sat up and wiped the floor, wiped the dust from her eyes, and threw the chunks she'd gathered against the wall. When the chunks hit the wall and shattered to bits, the girls around her looked up in shock. To break a chunk was wicked, and all the girls, especially her partner, were afraid. "I'm not going to do this anymore." Her voice was matter of fact. She stood up, brushing the black dust from her clothes. She raised her voice. "You don't see those bastards down here doing this, do you? But who gets this stuff? Them. I'm not going to do this anymore." A couple of guards swooped her from behind. They threw a cover over her. As they hauled her off, we heard her thrash. "They don't live like this," she yelled. "Look how they live. Look, look." We heard their boots, and her shouting stopped. We tried not to listen to what the workhorses and guards were doing to her in the abandoned scene. But neither the rattle of the carts nor the sounds of our clawing and scraping could drown out the noise of the hooves. We shifted around to fill in for her. We hoped we would forget what we had witnessed. For a while, we tried to think of her as crazy, an aberration. But no matter how hard we tried to make excuses for her, we couldn't convince ourselves that she was wrong.